Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 21st, 2020. South Sudan's rebel leader takes credit for killing six presidential bodyguards.
We are defending ourselves, John. We are not attacking the government, we are defending ourselves. That force of the government, that is in Lebanon, was in an offensive kind of operations. Taking information of our positions is an aggression. So we need to defend ourselves so that information are not taken from our positions for them to use them to attack our forces.
And Sudanese and Chadian officials sign an agreement to fight terrorism along their borders.
Chad has been playing a great role in supporting our efforts towards achieving lasting peace in the country. We are grateful to the president and to all Chadian people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The rebels of the National Salvation Front say their forces killed six bodyguards assigned to South Sudan's Vice President James Wanyika during an attack at Lobonok village nearly 90 kilometers from the capital Juba. Mr. Iga was not with his bodyguards at the time of the attack. The leader of the National Salvation Front, General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, told South Sudan in Focus on Thursday that his forces were fighting in what he calls self-defense during Wednesday's engagement. He says the presidential bodyguards were spying on his forces.
This is not an issue of speculations. Everybody knows that the government in Juba under Salva Kiir is the one attacking National Salvation Front, uprooting our people from their villages for the reasons they know very well. So it is not something that needs to be investigated. All the organizations, Citizen and even the enemies in Juba, they know this. National Salvation Front is forced into corner to defend itself and the population as we can.
With all this happening right now, are you still committed to the Rome Declaration?
Indeed, we are committed to Rome Declaration until this moment.
But if you are committed to the Rome Declaration, why would you attack a convoy that is moving inside South Sudan?
We are defending ourselves, John. We are not attacking the government, we are defending ourselves. That force of the government, that is in Lebanon, was in an offensive kind of operations. Taking information of our positions is an aggression. So we need to defend ourselves so that information are not taken from our positions for them to use them to attack our forces, as usual.
The government military spokesman, Lul Roy Kwong, has been on record several times saying that your forces have been attacking government positions. And you are telling me that the government is attacking your position. This sounds like the two of you are blaming each other for starting a fight.
If there is any neutral observer in South Sudan, you know that even from March to April and May and June and July, the government forces were out. Remember that they marched, they attacked us until our bases around Loka, around Lanya, around Ondruba, all these areas. And it was not a secret. And then they went there, they uprooted our civil population. They brought them to Lanya. They brought them to Kenya, to all these places. So it is not a secret to somebody to say that we are the one aggressing or attacking the government forces.
Yeah. Talking about the civil population, 2 weeks ago, or three to be precise, a car was traveling from Juba going to Mundri and reaching around the area of Jambo. Your forces, under the command of Kenyi Loborong, attacked a vehicle carrying civilians. A lot of civilians were abducted and some were freed. They were forced to walk on foot to Juba. All their belongings were confiscated. Now you are also saying here that the government is attacking civilians. You are also doing the same.
You are totally different. You are People's Movement Revolution. We are fighting for the people of South Sudan. We are defending the people of South Sudan. If you remember when the government started their offensive against our forces, especially in May, we made a release to the people of South Sudan that now we are under attack and we are informing our civil population to cease from moving from point to point because of this fighting now against us, because we don't want them to be casualties or these attacks of the government against us, because NAS will be in a position to defend themselves. That's right.
If you are attacking a vehicle that is carrying civilians, is that called defending yourself?
In a war, when there is a movement of vehicles on the road, we don't have a satellite to see whether this vehicle is for the forces of the government or for the civilians. When there is a fight, you don't know who is in the car. What we know, we are telling the population that they should not be moving at this time of the attacks of the government forces on our forces positions.
You kept saying you are on your position. So where are you positioned?
John, we cannot tell you our positions. We are in a war, and we cannot tell you our secret for Juba to use it.
The attack in Lobonog is too close to Juba. I mean, are you around the vicinity of the capital?
Of course. Remember, recently we aborted an operation that's supposed to come out from Luri and Gorom to attack our forces around Wendruba and Rokon. So we are around. We are mobile forces, and we are everywhere in South Sudan, and especially where now the government is attacking us.
And you're fighting during a peace time. People in Juba are struggling to put food on the table.
When you go in the capital, Juba, in our rural areas, there is no peace. Now South Sudan is collapsing. Our people are fighting themselves everywhere. Even where the President Salva Kiir come from, now the people are killing themselves village against village. If you go to Jungle, our communities are left killing themselves, and there is no government there. So the people must know there is no peace in the country.
If you are given an opportunity, how would you resolve this problem to bring peace in South Sudan, since you're saying there's no peace?
We think that we, as sons and daughters of South Sudan, we should sit in a very neutral place and in a very sincere way, and we discuss the root causes of the problem in South Sudan. And we agree as South Sudanese to bring a genuine peace to the people of South Sudan, give them their power, and let them decide what they want for their country.
With all this happening, a lot of people in Juba are wondering, where is Thomas Cirilo?
I'm mobile all over the world, everywhere.
What does that mean?
That means I'm moving a lot. I'm doing a lot of diplomatic work and political work to support the National Salvation Front and the like-minded opposition.
Let me use your word. You are saying you want to rescue the people of South Sudan. At the same time, your forces are attacking civilians. Is that rescuing?
John, you are repeating this question of attacking civilians. We told you that we have warned the population to be careful because we are under attack and we are defending ourselves. So we don't want to be victims of this fighting. So it is not us attacking the population. If you go to the ground, the population will tell you.
And when are you coming to Juba?
I will come to Juba when there is a genuine peace, when there is a genuine agreement that gives power to the people of South Sudan. Not power to Salva Kiir to continue destroying the country.
That was General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, leader of the National Salvation Front. He was speaking with me via a messaging app from an undisclosed location on Thursday. Sudanese and Chadian authorities have agreed to work jointly to fight terrorism along the two countries' common borders. The head of the Sudan Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhani, raised Chad's role in fighting terrorist groups in the region. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking in Arabic shortly after his meeting in N'Djamena yesterday with Chadian President Idriss Deby, Sudanese General Abdel Fattah said the two leaders discussed bilateral cooperation in the fight against terrorism and ongoing peace efforts in the region. Al-Burhan said he briefed Deby on ongoing Sudanese peace talks mediated by South Sudan in Juba and appreciated Chad's support.
Chad has been playing a great role in supporting our efforts towards achieving lasting peace in the country. We are grateful to the President and to all Chadian people for their tireless support to push our peace process forward and to work together to defend our borders and contribute to secure prosperity to our people.
The Sudanese leader also commended Chad for hosting Sudanese refugees for nearly 20 years. Chad hosts nearly 400,000 Sudanese refugees who fled the Darfur region due to the deadly violence, according to the UN. General Al-Burhan said Sudan will send troops to fight terrorist groups at the border and work with Chad on other issues.
We are here confirming our full support to Chad and in its fight against all terrorist groups. Our visit also tackled issues of bilateral relations between the two sisterly countries, which include political and economic development. We also discussed the situation in other neighboring countries, such as the Central African Republic.
Al-Burhan said the two leaders also discussed developments in Chad, including ongoing preparations for holding general elections early next year. Chad and Sudan established social and religious ties in Sudan's West Darfur region long before either country's independence. Under Ostat President Omar al-Bashir's rule, relations between the two countries were strained while the government carried out near daily bombardments of Darfur. In Chad's civil war, both governments accuse each other of supporting rebel groups inside each other's countries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Hundreds of secondary school teachers in Jonglei State have gone on strike to protest the state government's failure to pay them their monthly incentives for the past 14 months. The state director general in the Ministry of Education in Jonglei State says his office is yet to receive the money from the National Education Ministry. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
207 secondary school teachers marched to the Jonglei State Education Ministry today to demand their monthly incentives be paid. Teachers unpaid incentive for the past 14 months total 30 million South Sudanese pounds. Teacher Philip Woy says he and his colleagues marched to the ministry's offices, but the response was negative.
We are exerting more pressure to get more evidence such that we can even take legal procedures against them. In fact, we are suffering. Our suffering is beyond description. Due to COVID-19, all the schools have been closed, and of course, we are not getting any pay.
Secondary school teacher Manj Garang accuses the education ministry is squandering teachers' incentives.
We have indeed fought a lot of battles with the state government. Now, this is the third battle, if I'm not mistaken. And we need clarification from the two ministries, especially here and Juba, to clarify what has gone wrong. This is now August 2020, and the money has been coming since last year.
Garang says teachers have not received incentives since June of last year. Teachers' representative Jacob Ateng says teachers were supposed to receive the equivalent of $40 a month paid in South Sudanese pounds at the prevailing exchange rate. A secondary school teacher in Jonglei State receives an average salary of 5,000 South Sudanese pounds per month. Ateng says many teachers' lives have become unbearable after not being paid for several months during COVID-19 and flooding across the state.
These teachers used to hustle, used to move school to school for timing to at least sustain their lives. But nowadays, schools are closed. There's nowhere to find this support which they were getting from schools. It has been really hard for them to cope up with this life of flooding where they are displaced from their homes.
Kuyok Abol Kuyok, undersecretary in the National Ministry of General Education, says money for teachers' incentive for last year up through March of this year was sent to all states, including Jonglei, and if they did not receive their money, teachers should contact the State Education Ministry Director General.
Yesterday, I had a similar discussion, and I even called the DG, and the DG told me that they have not gone to him. Let them go to him.
Jonglei State Education Ministry Director General Abel Manyuan says his ministry has not received money from Juba.
If they want this money to be paid by the government, it is not the question of making noise on the radio or on the newspapers. The only option is to find an amicable way where you can convince the National Ministry of Finance and the National Ministry of Education to follow up this money, and then this money is to be sent to them.
Last October, board teachers went on a strike over alleged mismanagement of the impact incentives. The teachers believe their incentives for 6 months totaling more than 13 million South Sudanese pounds was wired into the account of the State Ministry of Finance in March. The State Ministry of Finance admitted it received the money but said the funds were spent on other priorities. It later promised to refund the teachers the full amount, which has yet to happen. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization experts want children to return to school. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get, or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself. I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with a chill drink.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Experts from the World Health Organization and the United Nations Children's Emergency Fund say it is critical that children across Africa return to school soon and safely. To that end, the UN agencies have formulated guidelines to make school opening safer on the continent. For VOA News, Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Across the African continent, hundreds of millions of children have been shut out of school as governments have imposed coronavirus restrictions by closing educational institutions. But top global health officials say that after nearly 6 months of disruption, it's time to get back to school. A recent survey by the World Health Organization found that schools are fully open in only 6 of 39 countries surveyed. About a dozen countries, including South Africa, plan to resume in-person learning in September. Dr. Matsidiso Moeti, WHO's Regional Director for Africa, says the decision to reopen schools is not an easy one for health experts, administrators, or parents, but it's the right one.
The decision to open schools or not amid the pandemic is a difficult one, but we must find the right balance to avoid trading one adversity for another. The longer that children are out of school, the greater the risk that they may not return to school. School closures are potentially exacerbating risks of teenage pregnancies, of violence against children, of substance abuse, of anxiety, loneliness, and isolation.
Mohamed Fall, UNICEF's Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa, says the risk of children falling behind socially or academically is worth considering. He also expressed concern that in his region, UNICEF found that the incidence of violence against children has risen, while nutrition rates have fallen, with more than 10 million children missing school meals. He also notes that the science supports schools reopening.
So far, science and data, as mentioned by Dr. Moeti, have shown that children are not the biggest bearer of the disease. We have seen in many countries that the age group from 5 to 18, who are the age group for primary and secondary school, are just 2.5% of the confirmed case of COVID across the country we are working in. And then making it clear that if there was a carrier of the disease or a risk of spreading transmission, the highest risk is not in this age group.
That said, both experts urge schools to follow precautions, especially to avoid the spread of the disease from children to vulnerable people. Those precautions have been laid out by the WHO, Moeti said. But she and Fall acknowledge that cash-strapped, overburdened schools may struggle to implement some guidelines. According to research by WHO and UNICEF, only a quarter of schools in sub-Saharan Africa have basic hygiene services. Just 44% have safe drinking water, and only 47% have basic sanitation services. But Moeti said it comes down to taking the necessary precautions.
I think what needs to be, from the safety point of view, it is keeping a distance, It is the children not transmitting the virus to each other through the wearing of masks, and it is very much paying attention to hygiene, water and soap, and sanitizers if that is necessary.
Moiti and Fall, who are both themselves parents, say they understand that getting small children to keep a distance, to properly wear masks, to adequately and regularly wash their hands, and to otherwise observe proper hygiene protocols is no small task. In many ways, they say this school year will be, for teachers, parents, and the kids themselves, a learning experience like no other. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
During the many months since COVID became a global pandemic, our normal ways of doing things have become altered, sometimes almost beyond recognition. For example, until recently, most non-emergency medical and dental care have been suspended to keep both patients and health workers safe and to make way for massive needs of those infected with the virus. This trend has taken its toll on oral health as well, as many have foregone oral routine dental exams and treatment while clinics have been closed. To find out more about the importance of routine dental maintenance and the health hazard associated with interrupting it, especially for children, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Dr. Jessica Lee.
So routine dental care, maintenance dental care, are checkups with a dentist that can help with detecting cavities early on. It also detects gum disease before it progresses to a severe state. We know that if we catch things early, it's an easier fix. A small filling eventually becomes a big filling if that didn't get treated, so we like to catch them when they're small. And we're still seeing the effects of patients that could not obtain routine dental care in our clinic right now that might have had small cavities before the pandemic, now coming in and they need either a crown or sometimes the teeth need to be pulled because the cavities have gotten so large.
I'm sure you've seen some really difficult cases since you reopened.
Unfortunately, yes. We had a three-year-old kid where we had to take 10 teeth out on because they were all broken down to the gum line. And you can only imagine the discomfort and pain the child was in before we were able to provide him some treatment. This child had 10 cavities before the pandemic that we were going to try to fix, but then we lost them for 3 months and those got worse, and then that turned into extractions.
Wow, that must have been tough.
It breaks your heart. I mean, it really does, because you want these child, you know, to be healthy and to be able to eat and drink and just the basics of life. You know, I mean, this is not a lot to ask for a kid to be able to eat and drink comfortably.
And there can be infections too, right?
And that's an excellent point. You know, in North Carolina, that's one of the top reasons why children go to the emergency room, because they have an infection from a tooth that didn't get treated. And it turns into an infection of the cheek and sometimes goes up near the eye. And so it could be really devastating.
Even when there is no decay or infection, a dental visit is still an opportunity for kids to learn about oral health, including diet, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. We are trying to get some education and implement some good behaviors and habits. And we know that those from disadvantaged backgrounds have a higher rate of dental disease. And here at UNC, we don't turn anyone away. And we have a lot of recent immigrants that come see us. We're thrilled to see them, and we want to provide them good care. Unfortunately, sometimes they don't have access to the nutritious foods that they might. Sometimes they have, you know, access to soda pops and the chips, the refined sugars, the refined carbohydrates. I know with the COVID, many of us stayed home, and I too probably snacked more than I should have on stuff I shouldn't have ate just because it was a trying time. So we are working with kids to make better decisions on habits, but also brushing your teeth so that we don't have these devastating effects later.
I know most dental problems are completely preventable.
Yeah, you know, this generation of kids are so fortunate because we have so much information and all the technology to make sure they can keep all their teeth. There are generations before us that it was a matter of practice that people would get teeth pulled because they had large cavities or gum disease. But now, you know, this generation has no reason not to keep all their teeth.
And here in America, we now put fluoride in the water.
We've had this controversy in the U.S. about fluoridating our water. But fluoride is, you know, I would say it's one of the best things we can to prevent cavities. It's like calcium for your bones. But there's been a controversy about adding it to our drinking water.
What is fluoride anyway?
It's a naturally occurring element, and it will bind to the teeth, so it prevents the teeth from breaking down. Fluoride makes your teeth very strong. In parts of Africa, it happens naturally in the water sources, and it's very protective against cavities.
How fortunate for Africans.
Yes, they do have an advantage.
Last question to sort of sum up. Your clinic is fully open. Why did it take 4, 5, 6 months to start seeing patients again?
some of it had to do with whether or not we were going to have the personal protective equipment available. The gowns, the gloves, you know, we were very much trying to make sure that our medical colleagues who were on the front lines had enough first. There was a while there where we didn't know if we were going to have enough. And we're in a good place right now to make sure that we are fully protected, that patients are fully protected. And so that's why we're open again.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with Eddie Kenzo and Awilo Longomba with their song, Roda.
Shake it that, shake it this, shake it that, shake it that. Oh, no, that, set me one little, oh, mama, what the line you want me? Oh, no, that, set me one little, say that you, oh, that you're going, mommy, you. Walk to the town, walk to the town, what the sherry, shake them. Walk to the town, walk to the town.
Listening to Eddie Kenzo and Awilo Longomba with the song Roda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it.